So one of the horrific and unmistakable signs of the global wave of opposition to the Vietnam War were the pictures of Buddhist monks setting themselves on fire in Saigon, particularly Thich Quang Duc, whose public death was captured by the camera of photojournalist Malcolm Brown back in 1963. Well, in Tunisia, a month ago, Mohamed Bouazizi set himself on fire in a protest that helped kindle the wave of protests that brought down the repressive Tunisian government. And the ritual of self-immolation is repeating itself following the Tunisian revolution in incidents in Algeria, Mauritania, and Egypt. In its simplicity and barbarity, self-immolation is the polar opposite of the suicide bomber, whose body becomes a weapon aimed at destroying, and the impact of the event is calculated in the carnage achieved. But the suicide protester, the immolator, his target is clear. His or her victim is even clearer. The lone protester dies. Calculating the impact, though, of this image and sacrifice, that is much, much harder. And to help answer that, we're joined by Michael Biggs, a sociologist at the University of Oxford, who's taken a look at the history of self-immolation. Michael Biggs, good morning.
Hello.
And we're thrilled to be joined by Malcolm Brown, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and photographer, who is best known for those award-winning photographs of the self-immolation of Buddhist monk Thich Quang Duc in Saigon in 1963. Malcolm Brown, good morning.
Good morning.
Malcolm Brown, what did you think you were looking at in 1963 when you came upon monk Thich Quang Duc?
Well, it was clear to me in advance that they intended to commit suicide and use that as a protest. That they sort of hinted that it would either be disembowelment or flames. So I was certainly aware that this was a political act, I was not prepared for the feelings of horror that I felt and all the spectators felt as they watched Thich Quang Duc die.
Did you think he was I'm just trying to imagine what went through your mind. Did this seem like the act of a lone crackpot, someone who had a very personal issue here? Did you imagine that it would have the wide sort of resonance that eventually it assumed? I mean, your pictures, you Google self-immolation and your pictures still come up.
I hardly thought about the global implications of the photograph. I was simply trying to keep up with the various things that one has to do as a photographer, changing film and setting f-stops and all that sort of thing. And it was only I think afterwards that I became aware of the horror of the situation.
And the extent to which it started a protest that changed the world. Of course, that was 1963. It would be many years before the Vietnam War ended. Michael Biggs, how close have you come to this event emotionally of self-immolation in your research?
Well, of course, this is research based on looking at a large number of cases over four decades. And so it's looking at the sort of patterns that emerge rather than sort of the particulars of one individual case. And, of course, one can't interview those people who have died.
Well, Michael, I mean, when self-immolation is used as a protest, is it the fact that it's such a painful way to die, that it's such a horrific way to die, that makes it such a powerful protest, that makes it so moving to not only the people that are there, but those who hear any report or see images?
Yes, of course, that's one of the factors. Of course, another factor is that while it's terrible and gruesome, it's also very spectacular, but also it can be shown. So Malcolm just said that monks were also thinking about disemboweling themselves. But, of course, if they'd done that, you can't show that, at least in the West, in a newspaper picture. It's just too graphic, too gruesome. But burning, I mean, this is sort of a horrible thing to talk about, but burning is gruesome enough to be photographed and to be spectacular, but it's not so horrible, horrific that we can't actually show it.
It is a horrible thing to talk about. Michael Biggs, did it surprise you, the case of Mohamed Bouazizi and the impact that it had in Tunisia?
It was surprising because we haven't found many cases of this in the Muslim countries so far. Some Muslims in Western Europe have set themselves on fire, Kurds from Turkey and Iranians, an Iranian group as well, but not in Muslim countries. And so that's what is unusual about this case. But it shows that it's not simply bound to one culture, that it can spread across cultures.
Do you think the symbolism of self-immolation stems from the very famous pictures of Thich Quang Duc, or does it go even into more ancient symbols of being burned at the stake or other kinds of punishment rituals that involve the burning of live humans?
Well, I suppose the fact that burning can have a more sacred a sacred sense in some Eastern religions like Hinduism and Buddhism has a more sort of sacred sense, whereas in Western, including Muslim and Christian religious traditions, it is perhaps more horrific and perhaps harder to take culturally. So we do find it more often occurs in South Korea, Vietnam, India, these Eastern civilizations.
Michael Biggs is a sociologist at the University of Oxford whose research to self-immolation as a political protest over the last few decades. Malcolm Brown, your thoughts when you heard about the case of Mohamed Bouazizi and these additional self-immolation cases in Algeria, Mauritania, and Egypt as political protests?
It seemed to me that there were very close parallels between the Indochina situation in the mid-60s and the current situation in Tunisia and elsewhere in the Middle East. Certainly, the self-destruction has been a part of the weapons used by relatively weak people to bring their point of view to a very very wide group of people and to I've just been rereading some texts about some interviews with the former kamikaze pilots in Japan, which were sort of a representative group of self-immolating. It was not just to blow up American battleships and aircraft carriers. It was very much a part of the cultural tradition of the men involved. And I think now it's become a sort of a standard routine in many parts of the world. The object differs from one region to another, but I think that the people. The shock aspect of the horror of seeing these things on live television or whatever is sufficient to mobilize a large group of people. We're seeing some copycat. So
yes, well, I mean, the Algeria, Mauritania, and Egypt cases were copycats, and if the Tunisia example is any sign, the resonance of this particular protest ritual has not lost its power. Malcolm Brown, Pulitzer Prize-winning American journalist and photographer of the death of Thich Nhat Hanh Quang Duc, the Buddhist monk who self-immolated himself in 1963 as a protest to the Vietnam War. Malcolm, thanks so much. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.